Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, hello, my lovely friends. Welcome back to a new episode of Catch Up with Louise McSharry. I hope you are well. Hope you had a lovely week. Mine was pretty good. I was in Wexford over the long weekend. We're super lucky. My parents have a house there that we get to go and enjoy. And I love it because I find it very hard to relax in my own house. In my own house, it's like, there's a job that needs to be done. There's a job that needs to be done. There's a job that needs to be done. Like, it's unending. But when we are in Wexford, I can actually like chill out a little bit and read. I just started reading Louise O'Neill's new book, Idle, which I am massively enjoying. If you want to pre-order it, I would highly recommend. Going to be talking to Louise on the podcast in the next few weeks as well, which I'm really looking forward to. But yeah, that's kind of the height of it. It was pretty chilled out. Nothing major. Was delighted to be at the launch event for Sophie White's new book last night. It's called The Snag List. And last night myself, comedian Emma Doran, who is absolutely gas, and Maureen O'Connell were on a panel discussing our individual millennial life crises with Sophie. It was such good fun. Really good crack. And if you were there, thanks for coming. And we are going to be talking a little bit about Sophie's new book, The Snag List, later on in the podcast. But sure, we might as well get into it. And we will start, as we always do, by catching up on the news. Thankfully, we have our beloved Aoife Moore, political correspondent from the Irish Examiner, to catch us up. Aoife, my friend, we will begin where we begin every week at the moment, and that is in Ukraine. What's the latest?
Yeah, we've gone from COVID every week to Ukraine. Ukraine's prime minister was in Ireland yesterday, Denis Shimal. Flew into Shannon on his way to the States to meet President Biden. He had an hour, two hours meeting with the Taoiseach, where he was talking about something I hadn't actually considered, but this worry and effort that Putin is now trying to create a global food crisis. We know, obviously, that Ukraine is well known for its exports in grain and sunflower oil. If you haven't noticed, grain and sunflower oil are in absolutely everything. And they believe now that Putin's next concerted effort will be that he's trying to disrupt those supply chains. It'll put pressure on other countries then to force Ukraine to stop fighting, to concede to Putin. That's not what they want. Elsewhere, the other issue that we heard last night coming out of cabinet is that we are likely to run out of accommodation for refugees by the end of April. So last night, the first refugees filed in the Mill Street Arena. Now, this is a place that has, you know, show jumping competitions.
Yeah.
It's in Cork. It's been set up to house refugees. Now, they only want them there for a couple of days. It's segregated camp beds. There's washing facilities. They have access to Ukrainian TV, etc. But this is not somewhere that you could live long-term or should live long-term. Yeah. There'll be kids getting up in the morning, going to school. You know, that's not what we want.
In terms it's so of like, hard to talk about this, though, without direct provision just banging in the back of your head. Just like, hello.
It is. Like, it's really stark. Last night, I was on TV with the Minister of State, Anne Rabbit, and I was saying, you know, we don't want these people in these conditions long-term. And she was nodding her head. And I was kind of like, But we leave people in similar conditions. Yeah. In first of all, homeless emergency accommodation, yes, is like camp beds, and also direct provision. I know it's obviously a wee bit different direct provision because there are rooms.
But you're still talking about kids getting
an incredibly low standard of living in a lot of the places.
And you're talking about kids getting up in a living situation in both homelessness and in direct provision in a situation that is not appropriate and having to get up and go to school from that situation.
We need to also decide, the government needs to decide what they want, because what we're seeing now is that we have 90% of our emergency and hotel accommodation is being used, which is great news for the hospitality sector in the very short term. The taxi man who took me to the studio last night told me that he had a holiday booked for Easter holidays to go to County Clare, and the hotel phoned him and said, listen, we're going to have to cancel your booking and refund because we have the entirety of the hotel booked out for Ukrainian people and the government are paying us. Fulcha Ireland have said, coming into the summer, this isn't a sustainable business model for the hotels. It's not appropriate for the people. We are supposed to be, or the target number, or the number that was put out about Ukrainian people coming to Ireland was 200,000. We're at 24,000 and we have 90% capacity for accommodation.
Yeah, that doesn't add up.
We heard last night also that over 1,000 people have withdrawn their offer of accommodation already from people who had pledged in the first instance. That could be for a myriad of reasons. They don't have the space. They might have found someone through Facebook, which anecdotally I know people have. But the Defence Forces and the Red Cross are vetting these homes. Apparently, the target time to vet a home is 2 weeks. We have 400 odd Ukrainian people arriving every day.
Yeah.
So I think the government in one way really needs to be congratulated on how they have reacted.
Yeah.
As we talked about before, I think they've painted themselves into a corner now, because I would like to see this across the board for people who live in direct provision.
Yeah.
However, there needs to be, I believe, and there is a lot of talk about this in government circles now, one minister in charge. We have seen what happens with social issues when there's a number of departments in charge. Domestic violence, for instance, before Helen McEntee came along, was put between three different health, housing and justice. It didn't work. It became very ad hoc. We can't have the same thing happen to Ukrainian refugees. And now we are seeing that direct provision is now completely under one minister as well. And I think that's what needs to happen now with the Ukrainian invasion, because if it gets too ad hoc, a lot of bad actors then get involved. It becomes for profit. And we know what happens when it becomes for profit. You end up with direct provision.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we'll watch that with interest. Now, let's talk about what's going on with CAMHS.
Yeah, so this is an incredibly sad story. And I also think it's very telling of how we treat mental health and the health service in general in this country. So CAMHS, which is the Child Mental Health Services, a report found that in Kerry, there was clear evidence that 46 children had suffered significant harm and 227 were exposed to the risk of significant harm due to the overprescribing of medication by a junior child psychiatrist. From the report, it is clear that this under-experienced doctor was basically left to their own devices, overworked, overstretched, and it was the children who paid the price. Now, after this report, the families are obviously due redress. There is now going to be compensation paid out. I don't think that there is any amount of money that can change this. So they announced that 9 senior counsels, 9 barristers are going to be appointed as mediators, and they'll take on this process and award families money, basically, for what happened. Now, they said the government say they don't want it to be adversarial. This is quite funny for people who work in politics, because the government say whenever these things happen that they don't want it to be adversarial. We saw it with cervical check. Yeah. We saw it with the industrial skills. When you listen to some of the testimonies of parents whose children were involved, there's one man in the Irish Examiner, his 14-year-old son, the living care Savine, he said that the child went from a bubbly, happy child to a zombie. Said that he was put on this cocktail of drugs to treat ADHD. So can you imagine having a child with ADHD, you know, very
energetic,
hyper, bubbly, and said that he went from a total zombie. He was running around or lying screaming because he was on too much medication. They were on suicide watch.
Oh my God.
And what is one of the most depressing things I've ever read, the father of that son said he has concerns over redress because he is worried it will be adversarial, because his father went through the industrial schools redress
Oh my
and he
gosh.
Found that very adversarial. the state continues to let people die.
Yeah.
We haven't learned anything. So this poor man who went through the industrial schools is now fighting the HSE because they've over-medicated his son.
So his father went through the industrial schools, mm-hmm. did he? Yeah.
And
his
son was over-medicated.
And now his son is a... Yeah. Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can understand why he wouldn't have a whole lot of faith. Yeah, and it's, you know, problems within the CAM service come up time and time again. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a huge issue that needs to be dealt with. And, you know, can you think of, it's like when you think about it, what are important things mm-hmm. to take care of? Like, surely we can all agree that children's well-being is like up at the top of that list. But even in just what we were talking about children being left in direct provision, children being left in, you know, inappropriate housing situations due to mm-hmm. homelessness, and now children not being taken care of within the child and adolescent mental health services. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, what are we really saying about what our values as a society?
There's also a total lack of joined up thinking, because Mary Butler, the minister, will often say, well, we have provided a record amount of funding for mental health this year, which fair enough they have. If you're going down to the statistics, they have. But if that money is lying there and not being utilized because we do not have the mental health specialists, nurses, yeah. doctors in place, it's all well and good saying you've awarded the money, but if yeah. the money's not going to the right place.
I get really sick of hearing that. Like, you know, the job goes beyond awarding
and
money.
And we saw on the Sunday Business Post a couple of weeks ago where the people in the Department of Health were openly talking about how they wouldn't be able to spend the funding because they didn't have the staff. There is a lack of joined up thinking. If it is the case that you don't have the staff, why are you not working with the Department of Higher Education and Skills and talking to them and saying, do we need to bring people in? Do we need a visa program from other countries? Do we need to give people grants to do this work because we're running out of them?
And sure, we know that loads of medical professionals are leaving the country because the country is becoming too hostile to live in. Like, you know, we've got a problem, guys. Obviously, you and I have all the solutions, Aoife.
I mean, I would never be a politician, but I'm just sitting here listening to myself being like, maybe we could do it.
Maybe we could. Okay, there's been a lot of kind of tech stories this week. What is going on with Elon Musk and Twitter? This is one of those things, and this is why we do this catch up, because sometimes you're like, I see that story happening over there, but I simply can't engage. So that's why we talk about these stories, to try and fill you in case you've been like, I'm just not able for Elon Musk today.
You could have just stopped that sentence as, what is going on with Elon Musk? And like, we could have just done this every week. Elon Musk, world renowned clown shoe, has Elon Musk has bought he spent a lot of money buying shares in Twitter in the last couple of weeks. You know Twitter, the haunted bird app.
I do. So
he has a 9.2% stake in Twitter, which is quite big. It's bigger than Jack Dorsey, who currently sits on the board. Jack Dorsey is vacating his seat next month, and Elon Musk said that he would join the board of directors. So the share price went up when someone like Musk gets involved. However, being, you know, the man that he is, he started tweeting saying, is Twitter dying? Doing polls on his Twitter. And it's like, if X amount of people vote for this, we'll give Twitter an edit button. If X amount of people do this, we'll give Twitter this. So share prices started like plummeting because people were like, this man is a clown shoe and he's going to ruin this company. So he said he was going to go on the board, and then immediately Twitter were actually happy out at the start. Then they were like, oh, no, we don't want him. He's decided then that he wasn't going to go on the board of Twitter, and then started immediately buying more and more shares, which obviously started panicking the board of
Twitter.
It's
almost like he was emotional about it, Aoife.
It's almost as if men are too emotional to do anything, Louise. So he said that he was going to buy up all these shares, and Twitter started panicking. So what they have done is called, this is a very boiled down version of what happened, but Twitter have now taken out this, it's called a poison pill defense, and they can basically stop Elon Musk accumulating more shares. So that means that if his 9% stake in Twitter goes over 15% without board approval, they can give their shareholders opportunity to buy more shares at a discounted price.
Okay.
So it means that Elon
Musk can't take
share,
over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it is there. It's just clear that Twitter are concerned. They don't want him anywhere near it at this stage. He's very volatile. He's very emotional. But also point out that Tesla, his main company, is not doing well.
Is
like,
it not?
It is not. So like,
because I feel like I see Teslas everywhere.
Yeah. So like,
and they're in songs all the time. That's my bestie and a Tesla.
We've gone from Monica Lewinsky to Teslas. So Tesla investors have serious concern that Twitter is become another distraction for Musk.
Well, yeah.
Someone on CNN said Tesla can ill afford any more issues that keep Musk from focusing on Tesla amid a deluge of recent high-level management departures. So he's losing staff at Tesla hand over fist as well. Now, I can't imagine he's the easiest boss to work for. So this would make sense.
Man, the tech world. I'm watching The Dropout at the moment, so I feel I'm expert on it.
And just to add to this, there's been two formal defect investigations into Tesla and a number of safety issues around their autopilot feature.
Okay, no good news there.
No.
We will... Elon... Decade.
Yeah. So they lost a quarter of their value on Tuesday in the company, and their subscribers shrank for the first quarter of the year. It's the first time in a decade that this has happened to them. They've blamed quarter over quarter erosion, and now a lot of this is linked to Russia. They have cancelled. Oh, really? They've cancelled Netflix in Russia, which is obviously
huge.
A massive country with a massive population, and also Netflix were one of the companies that really, really exploded in lockdown.
Yeah.
You know, everyone sat at home and watched Netflix. And that they put that down to pull, you know, that like it would obviously pull back when lockdown ended.
Well, yeah, because you need your money to spend on socializing again. So you're cutting back elsewhere. I'm certainly looking at
things. Yeah. So like, this is a really good point as well, that there are nearly 222 million households paying for Netflix. But they share the Netflix with more than 100 million other households. So, like...
Do you pay for Netflix?
No.
Okay, but you watch Netflix.
My mommy pays for Netflix. And I'm also still logged into my ex's Now TV. But I'm not going to...
I pay for Netflix. And now I pay for the, like, multi... Whatever. There's, like, a family subscription.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I do pay for that. But, yeah, I use it. My parents' household uses it. Like, my husband uses it, obviously. Mm-hmm. My sister uses it in her house. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm on my mommy's. And yeah, so like, that's really common. They did at one point consider putting ads on Netflix, like short ads, to try and make some more money. I think that would turn more people off.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the thing is, there's so many streaming platforms now. Like, it's, there's so many.
This is also why they're losing subscribers and money, is because the proliferation of things like Now TV, Disney Plus, Amazon, and Apple TV.
And in America, there's so many more.
Yeah.
Like, there's HBO, there's Peacock, there's loads, Paramount Plus.
They had it too good for too long. I think Netflix were really the first one,
they're
only
gonna have
one.
To work harder for their money.
And also, there's just too much stuff. I spent half the time just looking for something.
Aoife. Voice of the people. That's even more. Political correspondent from the Irish Examiner. Thank you so much. Now, Sophie White and I are good pals, so I am a little bit biased, but I also don't have just anyone on this podcast, and I was only delighted to have Sophie on because she writes so brilliantly about the way we live, both in her newspaper column and also in her books. She writes about parenting, about modern living, internet culture, all that kind of stuff. You've probably read Filter This and Unfiltered, her two books about influencer culture in Ireland, which are just, if you haven't read them, they are so gas. And her new book is taking another look at technology and the way we interact with it, but not so much on the influencer front. It is called The Snag List, and this week I sat down with her in her bedroom to chat about it. Where else would we talk? Sophie White, it is such a delight to be with you to talk about your fifth book. Like, that is so exciting. Five books. Sophie.
Yeah.
I remember before you had... Well, you had you'd written your first book and you were trying to get a second book out there, and you were really struggling to get someone to listen to you, basically.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, surely it must feel great to be this far down the line compared to that. That wasn't that long ago. Like, that was 5 years ago. You've written four books in 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, five if you count my novel that's coming at Halloween.
Yeah.
Look at me. So, yeah, no, obviously I had a very long journey to publishing my second book, first novel, Filter This. And yes, I try to just on days that I'm anxious, especially pre-publish, I just get really heightened right before publish of every book.
Yeah.
So I do try to remind myself that I would have given anything to be in this position when I was trying to get, you know, a publisher for my first novel and just trying to get anyone to see any potential in it or any good in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the rejection is, it is like, you have to build a muscle against it for mm-hmm. sure. But I am really thin skinned. Like I'm very sensitive. And so it's definitely just something that is an ongoing process.
Well, I mean, I think it's actually kind of a beautiful thing that you care so much about it and that you're so sensitive to people's responses. And I've read this book and people are going to love it. I know people are already giving you feedback because some people got their pre-orders early. It's called The Snag List, as you said, and it's such an interesting book in so many ways because it is light and fun, but it also really looks at the way that we're living and the way that we're heading because it's set in Monterey, which is this fictional kind of housing estate, but it's so much more than that.
It is. It's like a kind of full, it's almost like all the adults, they move to this kind of like outsized luxury and their every need is taken care of.
Like you have a personal concierge, you have someone looking at like barometers for your happiness and your satisfaction in your life. And there's a shop, there's like, you don't need to ever leave.
It's like having an au pair. As an adult, it's like you can be basically a toddler and be completely minded. Like everyone has like a life curator, like assigned to them. And so at the beginning of the book, we meet our three main characters who are all women who have been kind of thrown into Monterey Valley, kind of mainly because of their partners. And it's definitely not something that they would have chosen for themselves. And like the irony, I suppose, in the book is that like everything is looked after. But when everything is looked after to that like privileged extent, it kind of all that it leaves is the gaps in your life.
Yeah.
The regrets start crowding in. You almost have too much time to ruminate, which is obviously not a very sympathetic problem.
Yeah.
So but I did try to make like Lindy, Roe and Alva feel like us, even though they are in a strange, almost dystopian luxury.
Well, it's interesting because you were writing this in a dystopian situation where we were all living in the middle of the pandemic. And I think a lot of people were being confronted with the gaps in their lives.
Exactly.
In a similar fashion, because we were all day, every day with partners or whoever it is we choose to share our life with. And maybe some people were, well, I know that some people were questioning that. Some people were looking at, you know, what they had left when you remove kind of the frantic busyness and realizing that they actually didn't have that much or they weren't happy or they weren't missing things that they thought they would be missing. Did that play a part in writing this book?
I think it couldn't not have.
Yeah.
I feel like every novelist now is going to have their cursed pandemic novel. And so I was in writing it trying to project almost how we might feel after pandemic and after having those 2 years of like forced self-reflection, kind of forced stillness. And obviously, like you said, removing the kind of the busyness really was really confronting. Mm. I think like I stayed extremely busy through pandemic. I think you did. I think anyone who has young kids or, you know, parents who aren't well or, I mean, literally, actually, who was having a relaxing pandemic?
People, there are people.
I've
seen them on the internet. There are people who had a good time. And those people are people who were either in the early stages of a relationship beyond the awkwardness.
Dream.
Who were just like coupled up, having the best time, watching Netflix, eating food. Like, you know, nobody with kids. Nobody with kids. I think that's the real thing that separated us from the rest of the world during the pandemic was the fact that we had small kids. And you had a brand new baby and two small kids.
I did. That's right. What a terrible error that was.
I remember going to see you in the attic of your house, which is your bedroom, like not like you were just hiding in the attic, and sitting on the far side of the room from you beside an open window before the world shut down.
Yeah.
And being like super careful because, and I was coming to see you with your brand new baby Sunny.
I know.
And we had no idea.
So mad. Like I had that exact kind of experience with quite a few friends. Like our friend Subi had come over and she'd brought me like Auntie back.
Yeah.
Because at the time there had been runs on Auntie back. Yeah. And it's, I mean, honestly, what? I mean, if we'd known what we were getting into. Now, I live with a kind of, I'm a catastrophist and he's a Cassandra. It's a terrible combination.
What do you mean a Cassandra?
You know, like Cassandra is this character in Greek mythology who always predicts calamity.
Oh, I don't know.
And Cassandra. Disaster.
Okay, right.
And I suppose like Cassandra's great downfall is that nobody ever listens to her.
Okay.
But all of her predictions come true. And so Seb is the Cassandra. And we were sitting there in that March kind of 2020 listening to Leo's speech. And Seb was like, say we're looking at 4 years with this. And I was like, shut up. What are you talking about? I thought it was going to be like 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And
I remember Gordon saying, he was closer to 3 months at least. And I was like, stop saying that.
Yeah.
I couldn't face it at all.
And you know what? I remember really vividly, like Seb came up to me one day. It was in about the April of 2020. So things had been dragging on for a while already. And we were miserable. Yeah. Everyone was.
Yeah.
And he came up and he was like, came into the office. I was jiggling a baby and standing at the standing desk because that's how me and Seb worked in early pandemic when we had like a week's old baby. We had the standing desk that people could jiggle while they worked to keep the baby subdued in the sling wrap.
Yeah.
And anyway, I was doing that and Seb came in and he was like, it's over. And I was like, what? Yeah? Really? And he's like, nah. Yeah. Walked back out.
What?
Yeah, I was honestly with some of the cruelest.
Why would do something so cruel?
I mean, we do have a kind of, there is a cruelty in our humor with each other.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, that's harsh though.
That is harsh.
But anyway, look, we don't want to get sunken into pandemic chat. But that was the backdrop to you writing this book, where people are forced to kind of examine their lives and see how happy they are and how happy they're not. And I think one thing, it's not like, you know, directly, like no one in the book is saying, I wish I didn't have children overtly. But there is a question of the way that children affect your lives and the way you might feel about it, which I personally love to read. Because
You're doing the caveat.
No, but I'm explaining. Everyone knows. So like, I'm not going to keep saying it. Like if I say they're being a nightmare, they're being a nightmare. Like that's it, full stop. And sometimes they're being a nightmare.
Absolutely. And worse. And worse.
And but I think
we have a 2-year-old.
We both have a 2-year-old. But I think that, you know, really you don't get to talk about it. And certainly not from, you might be allowed, I do think we've moved into the territory where we're allowed to say 2-year-olds are a pain in the arse. Like we can say that now and usually you can get away with that. But it's the bigger picture stuff. It's the how having children and becoming a mother, and it is a mother. It's different for father. How that impacts your entire life and the fact that you might look and say, actually, this is not something that I would have done if I'd known it was going to impact me in this way.
Exactly, which is why it's like so amazing and important that like you, for example, are very open about it all on your platform. And I think you're doing like a woman, you're doing women great service with that. And the thing in the book that I kind of, why I wanted to explore that and how I kind of did was that one of the characters, Ro, is like on the kind of precipice of having kids. Her partner really wants to have a kid and they are like trying, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But Ro is actually kind of cock blocking the whole thing by secretly taking her birth control because she is just like, she's kind of a people pleaser, but obviously if you're people pleasing to the extent that you are going to bring a new person into the world, you need to look at that.
Yes.
And the other two characters have children. One of them is in her early 40s, Alva, and she's had like a kind of a random pregnancy with a guy she was kind of seeing and she's kind of ended up married to him. I actually think their relationship is really great. I love writing it, even though he's very quirky. And then the other one Lindy has an 11-year-old and her life is completely dictated by that child. And like, I think anyone who has an 11-year-old, their life is completely dictated by that child.
Oh, but no, I hate hearing that.
Oh, sorry.
It's going to get better.
Well, I know.
It's going to get better. They're going to
They're gaining independence.
Go to
all
their
the
room
time.
Occasionally instead of sitting on me.
Sure, sure. That's coming. But yeah. I suppose the way I wanted to illustrate that kind of thing of how, like, women, I think, do get railroaded into this kind of track. You get onto a track almost as a woman where the whole of society wants to find out when you're getting married, settling down, having kids. And yeah. It's so tiresome. And I think it's so great that, like, our generation, younger people, are all rejecting that. And I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Because I do think it's like this kind of unfair thing to sell that life to young, impressionable women. Don't get married.
Yeah.
Stop it immediately.
Yeah.
Don't have kids. Just don't. I can't in good conscience recommend it.
It's not a lifestyle. That is a joke. It's not a good lifestyle choice.
No.
I mean, truly, the effect that it has on your lifestyle, like, is not positive.
The well-being is eroded. We love our kids. TM.
I'm not doing it.
You don't TM it. But basically with Lindy, I wanted this like really kind of outsized kind of way of illustrating how kids can kind of lock you in.
Yeah.
And so I made them be this kind of YouTube family.
Yeah, which I am obsessed with and I loved reading. And like, I could talk all day about that because there's a lot of YouTube families in my house at all times. As much as I'm trying to...
They're raising our kids.
They are presence. And I hate them all. And all for different reasons. But one of the main reasons is they have got terrible taste in interiors. And I'm in their homes and it's awful all the time. But then someone said to me that apparently a lot of them are like rented houses.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's how Lindy ends up in Monterey Valley is that they cut a deal with Monterey Valley with their YouTube channel. So their YouTube channel is called Maxed Out. And Lindy is CEO. She is somehow boss and underling to her own 11-year-old Max. And basically their YouTube channel is one of those ones where the kids play with the toys all the time. And so Max, you know, he's been doing it since he was six. It's kind of gradually become like this kind of parasite on their family, actually. And it's really muddied the family relationships because Lindy's the boss, but she's their employee.
Yeah.
And her son is the boss of her. And Adam, her like extremely peppy American husband, is just loving life as a YouTube dad.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you about that, because I love that dynamic. I don't love it, but I love reading it, because it does seem like it's always the men of these families who are like, really, it's about them.
Yes.
Like they're always like, you know, front and center, star of the show. There's a father and son that my son watches and I hate them. I don't hate the kid. I hate the dad because he almost is like laughing at the kid a lot of the time. It's like, this is about you. This is your channel. This is about you. And you're using your kid for this like moment of glory. And it seems like there's a bit of that going on in Lindy's family situation as well.
Yeah, definitely.
What is that about?
Oh, God. I mean, I suppose it's just intoxicating. Just making loads of money off your kind of personality in a way. And I just think likes and views, you know, it's a dopamine hit. And even if you're getting them for like being this like embarrassing dad on the internet, you're still getting them. And it's so interesting about the pranks thing, because there's obviously like a lot of thought and discourse around the moral, you know, decision to commodify your kid's childhood. And there's so much judgment around it, but I do like endlessly just see that judgment. I know it's just tiresome at this point to say it, but it's like directed at the mothers
always,
even though it's the fathers who are invariably more on camera. And obviously, so the YouTube families are a part of my life as well, just around the clock. And I suppose the idea for it also kind of came about because my oldest had started to kind of say, can I have a YouTube channel?
Oh, my son is already at this.
Yeah.
He's
something
only five.
Now that will be in their psyche from dot, basically. Yeah. And like, I've even heard him playing and he'd be like, welcome back to my channel. And I've seen him watching and being told by the kids or the dads on screen, don't forget to hit that notifications button. And I've seen him just like really automatically hit it. And I'm like, wow, it's mind control. But also I am not a person who is anti-internet for kids. I feel like it's a complete reality of their lives. Like, why deny it?
100%.
But yeah, it's...
I also think, like, I struggled with the whole you're watching other kids play with toys and it just makes you want more toys and blah 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 blah. But then I was like, but I watch other people put on makeup.
Totally.
Like, it's the same thing. Yeah. I like to put on makeup, so I watch other people put on makeup. They like to play with toys, so they watch other people play with toys. Like, it's not actually that kind of far-fetched or hard to get your head around the logic of it. But I am endlessly fascinated by YouTube families, and the fact that that is in this book, I was delighted.
Well, that's it. You see, I love writing kind of gossipy things, and like, it's just what I enjoy so much, like any kind of internet drama. I just love all that stuff. And obviously there was just like the mine of bizarro YouTube families that I disappeared down was like some of the most fun research I've ever done. And like, there's kind of like the ones that have also broken off into kind of lifestyle channels, like where you'll have this family. It's all kind of began with the kids in a way, and the kids playing their toys for the camera. And then now you've got the mom, and she's got like maybe an interiors channel or like lifestyle stuff. The dads are obviously around the place dadding away. Ooh. How do those women sleep with those men?
I don't know, like, but they obviously like it.
With the guy's YouTube voice echoing in their heads. And that's the thing actually with Lindy and Adam in the book, was that I was really interested in that fact that like when your life is your kind of content, and it's a real similar thing with Instagram influencers and stuff like that. Like, what do you do when your whole income is dependent on you like just living a certain way and being a certain way, and how messed up that must be.
Yeah.
So with Lindy and Adam, like their like marriage is, I mean, I feel quite relatable, but they are, you know, they're married 10 years. It's all a bit perfunctory between them, and it's all very business focused too, because they work together. And there's this kind of event early in the book that kind of has Lindy questioning everything about her marriage. And she's there going, I need to bring this up. I need to address this. This is a real serious issue. But like, I need to check the schedule and see when's going to be an okay time to have this difficult conversation with my husband, because obviously we're scheduled up to the hilt with work stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I just was like, oh my God, like that is so bizarre to
me. But I think that's relatable even without... Like, exactly. My husband and I don't work together. We don't obviously have a YouTube channel or anything.
Yet.
But like, life is busy, you know? And by the time you sit down in the evening, it's, you know, at the moment in our house, it's 9 o'clock. I am exhausted. Like, I'm sure he's exhausted too. And like, I'm not bringing up anything serious. And months can go by and you cannot have a chance to talk about something that's actually really important, because you just feel like, I don't have it in me to actually go there right now, especially if it's something difficult.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, I forgot once to tell Seb that our neighbor had died.
Well, yes.
And it wasn't until Seb, so the neighbor's house was obviously vacant due to his passing, and there was like a kind of an alarm code beeping happening in his hallway, which is next door to ours, wafer thin walls. We were basically enjoying this beeping alarm for days on end, and Seb kept saying to me as well, like, God, like, I don't even know how is Leo tolerating that, because it's really loud, it's really annoying. And I was like, yeah. And just totally ignoring him, because he's my other half, and I listen to one word in every five, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah, it's mad. Even though like I clearly had the full picture. Leo's dead. He's not in there, guys. And it wasn't until I came home one day and Seb was on the phone. He was standing outside the front door on the phone to the alarm company. He was like, I just don't know what's going on, but this noise, like it's really getting in on me, and I can't seem to rouse my neighbor. And I came into the conversation, was like, what are you doing? He's dead. Dead, Seb. And Seb was like, what? The person on the phone was like, what? It was so, yeah, I mean, all of us are neglecting our relationships. Look, it's to some just degree.
Modern life. And I guess that's really what this book is all about. It's about having relationships and living lives in, you know, a world that has changed like dramatically over the last kind of 20 years.
Like, on that, one thing I think is I really enjoyed about my own book is Alva and Tom. So they're this couple who kind of like had a baby together and kind of like launched into a marriage, kind of barely knowing each other. And they are almost having this kind of remote marriage because Tom is this like crazy like tech guy, you know, the type, the kind of CEO, you know, ego guy. But I like Tom. I think he's really fun. But like he basically, you know, is defending their remote relationship setup to Alva. And, you know, they set up basically a sex Excel. It's kind of hard to say it.
A sex spreadsheet.
Oh my God. Sophie. Never nuanced. Anyway, and I do think that's really fun. Like, he basically says that, like, he's got, sorry. So basically his assistant, Maya, set up the Sexcel spreadsheet for them because Tom is literally that busy. He needs his assistant to schedule his sex with his wife.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's good. It's being prioritized.
Yeah, exactly. And so Alva, in this one scene early in the book, is describing the Sexcel Sexcel spreadsheet to her friend. And she said, the friend is like, what does Tom call sex? What does he call it? Like the human docking procedure? And Alva's there thinking, oh, it's not that far off. It's called intimacy exchanges, June to July 2021. And she said, she's like, I'll never be revealing to Holly that there is actually a key for the document too, like a code key. And if you enter IE-P, for example, you'd be logging a penetrative intimacy exchange. If you enter IERS, that's remote sex. And if you enter IE-ANL, well, let's hope it never comes to that. Alva winced. So, yeah, it's very much, I think with all my novels, I'm always interested in like really human stories for sure. Because like what is more human than like having regrets and thinking about the road you didn't take?
Yeah, 100%.
And obviously in this book, they all set out to try and take that road belatedly. But I do always, as well as the kind of human aspects, the heart of the book, I'm so interested in how people are interacting with this crazy late capitalist life that we're all locked
into.
Wild. You know, we're about to go we'll be married in the metaverse, you know, 90 day fiance, the ultimatum. Like yeah. How we're living right now is wild, batshit, bonkers. Yeah, and I love having fun with it.
It's only going to get wilder. That's the thing. Yeah. If you want more of that, it's The Snag List. It's by Sophie White and it's out now. Thank you, Sophie.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Now, there is lots to talk about in the world of entertainment this week, like why, for example, Julia Roberts hasn't made a rom-com in way too long, for example. So we might as well just get into it. This week, Cassie Delaney of the Tall Tales Podcast Network is taking us through the stories. Cassie Delaney of Tall Tales Podcasts, thank you so much for joining me once again. We have got beautiful celebs to talk about, and we have to start with Coachella because obviously it was the big celeb event of the week.
Isn't it? It's gas. It's just everything you'd expect. I feel like I can see the Coachella outfits in my mind before I click into any photographs. Yeah. It's just a lot of skinny people wearing a lot of expensive clothes that don't look expensive.
That they will never wear again.
Never, ever, ever, because they're completely impractical.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Coachella was interesting. There's a lot of the kind of initial reviews coming out of Coachella being like, yeah, it's grand. Like it was musically... Even though I don't think people go to Coachella for the music anymore.
Yeah.
You had the likes of Harry Styles. Now, he brought on Shania Twain.
Which was a stunning moment.
But I think it's also an acknowledgement that their lineup for Coachella was a bit like of the moment.
Yeah.
And when you go to a festival like that, like you want to see bands that you listen to growing up. You want to see someone who has a back catalogue of six, seven albums and who's going to whip out a banger from 2007 that you're going to just lose your mind to.
Yeah.
So to have like, I do think like Billie Eilish has a great catalogue now. Harry Styles, obviously, he's got, you know, he's got banger after banger.
He's just so hot right now.
But he's fantastic and I can't like... His look, his performance.
Have you seen? There's a TikTok where the girl is like, "So my wife, she's gay, and obviously her wife's gay, and she's like, my wife has said that she thinks that she would sleep with Harry Styles, but she also says that she believes that this makes her more gay."
Oh, 100%.
All of the replies are like, yes, totally agree, totally.
Yeah, 100%. I
have such an interesting character in that way.
He's like, he's that perfect kind of. Gateway drug, like you know, gateway drug for straight people into LGBT relationships. Like he is absolutely sensational looking, but I don't even prescribe a gender to Harry Styles.
No, he's just like a special being.
This ethereal, beautiful being who would show you a really nice time. I think and be very gentle. So
loves Harry. Maybe not if you didn't want him to be.
Yeah, but respectful all the time, respectful.
Yeah, I mean, consensual. Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
that's Harry. But yeah, otherwise, like, it just seems, you know, I think there was a couple of, like, new acts who aren't used to performing in front of huge audiences like that. Not a lot of reports coming out about amazing sets. A lot of it is always about the fashion, and of course, and the things that often go wrong at Coachella, the disasters, like...
Well, I think this year was, like... It was interesting because obviously this was the first Coachella since before the pandemic. Mm. So you had a lot of new influencers, people who became famous on TikTok over the last couple of years or whatever.
Yeah.
Who were suddenly kind of thrown into this. And they were obviously people who had been watching Coachella from the outside for years. And they were experiencing it for the first time. And loads of them were like, this is shit.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't fun. Like, I'm like penned up in a VIP area. I can drink here. I'm miles away from any of the music. Like, and they were all quite like forthright about it. They weren't playing the game.
Yeah. So a lot of the celebs, like the big celebs go on, they get all their brand sponsorship deals. They're there to get photographed in their fashion and they probably make a rake of money doing it. Whereas like the TikTok influencers of the last year, I think they were invited to promote it and get it out there. And naturally they were like, this is not for me. But also I think a lot of the people who kind of rose to prominence on TikTok, of which there are so many. You know, TikTok loves a viral moment. Mm. They are probably more suited. Like a lot of them became famous, I suppose, on TikTok for like kind of comic work or, you know, lip syncing or dancing.
But even like straight talking. And
stuff that's suited to sitting at home and doing it on your own. Yeah. So like a lot of introverts sent to Coachella and they're like, I don't enjoy this.
Yeah.
You know, not for me.
But then of course, the thing about Coachella is that so many brands bring... so many brands bring influencers and like celebrities to Coachella because there are lots of different parties around Coachella. So like you can go, it seems like, and not actually go to the festival, as many people didn't, and go to these kind of peripheral events instead. The main one of which was Revolve Festival.
Yes, which was a
disaster.
Revolve is like, it's like a like clothing, an ASOS kind of
yeah,
vibe,
like
right?
a clothing brand.
Yeah.
So probably just one of those great brands who deals a lot in fast fashion yeah. and has loads and loads of money to burn. So they were ferrying people over. So I think Coachella have been very quick to say that Revolve is not part of Coachella.
Yeah.
But they cannot control the events that go on outside of it.
Yeah.
Very much inspired by and part of and building on the vibes of Coachella, but not affiliated with Coachella. So this one outside festival, I mean, we had the like Kardashians at it. It was like
Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah. I mean, the who's who and what's what of celebland. But their logistics and their transport issues ruined it for everyone else. So there was buses that were delayed and there were influencers waiting for up to 2 hours. And then when they got on buses, eventually they couldn't even get in. So it was, you know, described like fire festival. They had no water, no food, which seems like a small fry. But when you're in the desert and you're like sweltering with probably nothing on but a tiny little swimsuit or whatever the fashion is, it is going to be incredibly uncomfortable to sit there for 2 hours
well,
and not
also,
get water.
I think what was really fascinating about this for me, and I gorged myself on TikToks about this from people who were is that people were invited and then they were contractually obliged. Like they were flown there in some cases. In some cases, people paid for their own stuff. Mm. But they were contractually obliged to go to Revolve Fest and take content because Revolve Fest is invite only and it's free. Like once you get in there, everything's free. So you had people who were like, I am breaking my contract if I don't go.
Yeah.
But I can't actually get there. Like yeah. that was an interesting kind of situation.
And
I
there
thought.
Was a lot of people saying once they did get there and they got on a bus, they were either being turned away because the logistics to get in were too bad. So they yeah. couldn't control the crowds and things like that. Just total, total nightmare. Unhappy people. But that's what happens when you advertorialize a music festival.
Yeah.
And you put loads of brands at it.
Well, that's what it is now. I mean, yeah. let's be real. Like, and you know, you'd worry a little bit that about our festivals going in that direction as well. You know, because obviously Coachella doesn't happen, you know, on its own and not impact anything else. Because, like, I don't know about you, but any festival that I've been to in the last few years, and obviously we haven't had festivals the last 2 years, so it'll be interesting to see now this year how it goes. But I have seen the direct impact of Coachella. I mean, literally girls dressing in outfits.
The exact same.
The exact same as Coachella, yeah. despite the fact that they're going to a field in Leash as opposed to a desert.
Yeah. And it's just like, some of those girls. Louis Vuitton looks and some of those Gucci looks do not translate with a pair of Pontarellis. Like they do
I'm
not.
I'm never going to be someone who kind of talks down about women and whatever they choose to do with their appearance or what they want to look like. Like, absolutely do it. But I am still, at the end of the day, a 39-year-old woman who's been going to festivals for 19 years going, that's not practical at all.
It's not practical.
I can't help it.
I think when you reach that age where you're like, I am going to prepare for the elements here at this festival, yeah. you realize you're going to have a much better time. When you've got a rain jacket and a little backpack yeah. with a little Capri Sun in there, you have a better time.
But the
time.
Thing is, we always did that. Like, it wasn't an age thing for people my yeah. age, but it's changed now.
Oh, 100%.
Now it is about the look as much as the experience. And look, I like getting together a few looks for a festival as much as the next gal, but I was also factoring in, like, weather and, you know, going to the toilet and
yeah. and
stuff
also,
like that.
Who
Maybe
am I going to
not
see?
A good idea to wear like lace up gladiator sandals when I'm going to be potentially stepping in piss every time I go to the toilet.
Yeah, on a hill yeah. in the rain Ooh. With the mud site. But yeah, or the kind of go. I remember going to festivals back in like, and I believe that there has never been a better lineup for a festival than there was at Oxygen 2007. I actually have an Oxygen 2007 playlist on my Spotify that is just all
who's
the
on
acts.
There.
You've got Block Party,
yes.
the Fratellis,
yes.
Snow well, Patrol,
yeah,
Muse,
yeah,
Scissor Sisters, Kings of Leon.
Yeah, like, I was definitely at that.
I mean, we were. Amy yeah. Winehouse was at that
yeah.
one. Mika, like the Wu-Tang Clan. It was brilliant. Tori Amos, the Goo Goo Dolls, the Gossip. A fantastic festival.
In short, festivals are not what they once were.
They really aren't.
It's a changing landscape.
Yeah. Sit at home, guys, and listen to some Joni Mitchell and Neil Young. Stop going to these festivals.
Okay, next, we have to talk. It's been a week now since Ryan Tuberty took on Jamie Lee O'Donnell on The Late Late Show. And it's been really interesting to watch people respond to it.
Yeah, I have to say now, I love Jamie Lee. I was at a thing once and she was like there and I could hear her talk to other people and she's very, very funny and has no time for bullshit, like
clearly
at all. So she's obviously on the Late Late last week and...
She's Michelle from Dairy Girls.
Yes, a star, a treasure. And Tubbs asked her how old she was and she responds, brilliant, was, I'm 117, very wise. Like
perfect,
absolutely perfect. But he kind of persisted a little bit and then she was like, I don't want to answer that question. I do think it's misogynistic. Men don't get the same scrutiny in their careers, which is true.
Yeah.
And then Tubbs sort of framed it like he was trying to ask, oh, because you're playing teenagers and you're all a bit older. But it's not the first time that he's brought this up with her, which I think he should have learned from. So when she was on the radio show, I think 4 years ago, he asked, you play a 16-year-old, but what age are you in real life? And she, again, handled it really well and said, not 16, which I think answers the question enough. Yeah. Like, she doesn't have to go into the, oh my goodness, you look so great for whatever age she is. I think she's handled herself really well. And I really think he should have learned from that. I do think it's a constant.
Well, I think the problem is I saw a lot of discussion online about this, obviously. And a lot of people were like, it was a fair question. Like, it was a fine question for him to ask. I actually don't have a major issue with the question. Mm. I understand where she's coming from. Like, her point is men don't have to talk about their age so much. And men are judged so much for their age within her industry. And age is a big thing. And, you know, I think that that's a fair point that, you know, it is slightly misogynistic question. I also understand from his perspective what he was trying to say is, I think, is like, I wasn't asking to kind of judge you based on your age, it was in relation to your character. But I also think that's tired. Like, everybody knows they're not teenagers.
Yeah,
teenagers rarely play teenagers on TV. Like, why do we have to go down that road? I think the real problem was the fact that he would not let her speak then.
Yeah,
he got flustered, he got defensive, he put his physically put his hand out like in a kind of stop motion and then wouldn't let her finish a sentence, interrupted her, that's not my style, that's blah 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 blah. Like, you are making, now you look like a misogynist.
Yeah, it was. And he was like, I'm done with that question. She kind of wanted to say something on the question. Yeah. I think explained, like, she has explained before that when it came out that Nicola Coughlan was like in her 30s playing a teenager, she kind of got a bit of a hard time for it. And, you know, Jamie Lee didn't like the way that she was treated in the media. So she didn't want to go down that road either.
Yeah.
And I think she was about to explain that, or she was certainly about to explain something.
But he wouldn't let her.
He got the hand and he was like, no, I'm done with that question.
I'm done with that question. Yeah. I didn't like it.
No.
I didn't like it.
And the thing is, he's not done with that question. He will make that mistake again because he has done it previously and he will continue to do so.
Now, I have to say, obviously, I've worked with Ryan Tubridy and I find him to be a very nice man. I think this was just not dealt with very well. And we all have those moments, but it maybe is something worth reflecting on, I feel.
Yeah.
Just very quickly, I just loved this. So Julia Roberts has been talking about rom-coms. Julia Roberts, queen of the rom-com. My Best Friend's Wedding.
Notting Hill.
What's that one where she leaves them all at the altar?
Runaway Bride.
Thank you. Loads of amazing rom-coms.
She is the rom-com queen. There is no one who has been in as many rom-coms as Julia Roberts. She is, when I think of a rom-com, I think of Julia Roberts. I also think of Hugh Grant and I put him out of my mind and I think so of Julia Roberts, right? And then you go to like your Sandra Bullocks and even Jennifer Aniston's, you know. Rom-coms, I think, are the most perfect genre of all time. I love them. They are art. I love them for all their problematic, ableist, just
heteronormative
privilege. Give them to me. I will sit and I'll watch them back to back.
Me too, girl.
And Julia Roberts has come out and she has said that she is working on a new rom-com that is going to be released later this year. It's called Ticket to Paradise. And the reason that she stepped away from the rom-com for the last 20 years was because they were not written well, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but I will say that Marry Me, starring Jennifer Lopez recently, was art.
Oh, I actually haven't seen that yet.
Loved
it. I'm dying to see it.
Absolutely loved it. There's this amazing bit in it where J-Lo is an artist and they're like, she's an artist, you know, north of 35. And I was like, yes, she is far north of 35. She's Antarctic of 35. But yes, it was fantastic. So this new film starring, of course, a wonderful pairing, George Clooney and Julia Roberts.
Stunning.
is coming out later this year. She said she read the script. She knew instantly it had to be George. George felt the same. It had to be Julia. So the premise of the film is a graduate goes to Bali, falls in love with a local and wants to get married. And her divorced parents are like, no, don't make the same mistakes we made 25 years ago. So we're guessing that Julia and George are
my divorced
parents. And you can sit here now and be like, what's going to happen is the young one falls in love. The parents go and try to stop her getting married.
They fall back in love.
Yeah. Then they're like, maybe we didn't make a mistake.
Yeah.
But then she realizes she doesn't want to get married at 25. Maybe they stay in a relationship. Yeah. And her friend meets a nice doctor.
Yes, that's exactly what's going to happen. And that's all I want.
Yeah. And the soundtrack is going to be perfect. And we're all going to see it. And we're all going to happy. And we'll cry. We'll cry at the end.
I can't wait. So just lovely to leave this week on such a happy note.
Yeah. Just watch Delaney. Some rom-coms.
If you want to listen to more Cassie, go and listen to The Creep Dive and check out the other Tall Tales Podcast Network podcasts. There are so many of them now. You are so busy. So thank you for making time for little old catch up.
Anytime, Louise.
You have it. I hope you feel a little bit more up to date now in what's going on in the world this week. But before I go, I wanted to give you a few recommendations. I forgot to mention this last week, but I visited a spa in Dublin City Centre last weekend. It's called Velvaire, V-E-L-V-A-E-R-E. I was invited there. I didn't pay for it, but I'm already booked to go back because I loved it so much. If you like spas, like I said at the start of the episode, like I kind of struggle to relax. It's not something that comes easily to me. So I love a spa. I love, just floating around. And it's kind of hard to get that vibe going in Dublin City Centre, but this is just off Golden Lane. And I absolutely loved it. It's really lovely and relaxing. Like everything is kind of new and beautifully finished. They have like a little pool and, you know, sauna, all that kind of crack, experiential shower. Who doesn't want an experiential shower? So you can have a treatment and then float around in the thermal suites for about an hour along with your treatment. Treatment started at 110 euros, so like it's not super cheap, but I had a gorgeous facial. It was so nice. And one thing that I think people who are larger sometimes can be concerned about is the table that you're going to be on. Like, you know, I'm not worried about tables collapsing under me. I know some people do worry about that, but I figure if that happens, that is a fault of the table and not of me. But sometimes it can be a little bit uncomfortable, but their beds are like really big and extra wide. So it was super relaxing having my facial. And that is a detail that I massively appreciate. But it was just gorgeous. Like, I want to bring my mother there, I want to bring my husband there, I want to bring my friends there, I want to go on my own. Like, I'd love a standing appointment once a week. Don't think the budget will stretch to that, but I loved it so much that I just had to mention it. If you are around Dublin or you're visiting Dublin for a weekend, even if you were coming, like if you were organizing a hen weekend or something and you were coming, and you probably wouldn't be able to get that many people in, but if you had a small group, even just a girls' weekend away, what a delightful way to spend a morning if you've indulged a little bit the day before. You know what I mean? Anyway, that sounds like an ad. It's not an ad. I just feel evangelical about it. Other than that, I've been watching The Dropout. You've heard about it already because I'm late to it, but it is Amanda Seyfried playing Elizabeth Holmes, who is the... Well, she started a business very young in the world of tech, and then it was kind of a house of cards that came crumbling down around her. It's very entertaining. It's extremely awkward. I'm enjoying it because the music is all the music of my youth, because it's set, she's, I think, about the same age as me. So it's set in my early 20s, basically. So you might enjoy that too. And then I've also dipped back into Whitney Port reacting to The Hills. I've been watching this now kind of on and off for months and months and months. And I think most people are aware of it, but just in case you're not, basically Whitney Port, who was on The Hills and The City, has made a YouTube series of her and her husband watching and reacting to The Hills. They did The City as well, and they've done Laguna Beach too, which I haven't gotten to yet. It is so entertaining because, I mean, first of all, they're just like nice, funny people, but also Timmy was a producer on The Hills, so he knows all the kind of behind the scenes, not on The Hills, on The City, sorry. He knows all the behind the scenes bits of like how things work and what's real and what's not real. And Whitney is obviously can tell you the behind the scenes of like what relationships were like and all that kind of crack. So if you haven't dipped into that, that's on Whitney Port's YouTube channel. I would highly recommend. And yeah, that's about it. Just want to say a huge thank you to you for listening. I so appreciate it. I'm loving doing this. It means so much to me. Every time I meet someone who says that they're enjoying it or hear from someone who says that they're enjoying it, the fact that you're taking time out of your week to listen to this means an awful lot to me. And I really hope that you continue to enjoy it. I would like to say, very excitingly, one of the great things about podcasting is that you can see where people are listening to you. And it is so amazing to see that people are listening all over the world. So if you are listening in, these are genuinely places. If you're listening in Cyprus, hello. If you're listening in Antigua and Barbuda, hello. If you're listening in the Philippines, hello. Hello, Singapore. Hello, Malta. Hello, Zambia. Hello, New Zealand. It's just so amazing to me that people are listening in other countries. So thank you very much. Thank you to everyone in the United Arab Emirates. Loads of you guys. Thanks very much. Loads of people in America, in the UK, in Australia, Canada, Spain. I just can't get over how thrilling it is to know that you guys are choosing to have this be a part of your life. So, yeah, I won't bang on about it too much, but I'm super grateful. And never forget that. You mean so much to me. I hope you have a lovely, lovely week. I will be back with you next Friday. And in the meantime, you know where I am, Louise McSharry on social media. And if you want to rate, review, follow, all the rest, that would always be appreciated. Have a great one.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.